good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and coming to the East Bank Theater this weekend. The Bossier Arts Council and the company Repertory Theater will present a Reader's Theater presentation of a two-act comedy called J.D. by George Sewell. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are playwright George Sewell, along with director Richard Fulmer, who will fill us in on the details. Richard and George, thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So this is a story about a woman named J.D., who basically marries into money and then finds out later on that maybe the cost of doing all of that was not necessarily what she wanted to pay. Can you fill us in on sort of the outline of this play?
Yeah, that's the gist of it. Jeanette Donnette, J.D. as she goes by, married into an old Louisiana political family, the Lambert family. And if you will, the price of marrying into that family was to sell her soul, her identity, her personality, her ambitions in order to be in alignment with her politician husband and his minions. And as time passed, she became less and less comfortable with having paid that price for a lifestyle that clearly she enjoyed. And after a couple of decades and being newly divorced with her daughter in college, she has a degree of freedom she hasn't had for quite some time, and she decides she wants her soul back.
Okay.
And the way she's going to go about that is to run for mayor against her ex.
Okay. Now, did her ex decide to part with her, or did she decide to part with her ex?
Well, he parted with her.
So he gave her permission to kind of be a tad bit resentful?
Well, that's certainly the way that J.D.'s sister-in-law, Louisa, interprets it. Louisa's very much in J.D.'s camp in her efforts to run for mayor against Louisa's brother. So it's got all sorts of moving parts to it, and with that kind of setup, what could possibly go right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into each of the characters. Tell us a little bit about J.D. as you see her in your writer's mind.
Well, in my writer's mind, J.D. is... she was a school teacher. That was her professional background before she met her husband, Bobby, and really liked the adventure of that political family and all of those dynamics, and it was very seductive, and she married into it, knowing up front that, well, you're not going to go back to teaching school again, and you're going to have to do what you have to do to make the campaigns work and everything fall in line politically. And that gets old after a while, and she reaches a point to where I want myself back. And being newly divorced from her husband gives her the ability to do that. So that's J.D. in a nutshell. It's a I want to be true to myself, and I'm going to do what I need to do to make that happen.
Okay, so she's reclaiming her life.
Yes.
And reclaiming her own persona.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, there's a lot of glad-handing and rump-kissing involved in a political world. And, you know, you can get a little sick and tired of that after a while. So how about the other characters? Let's go through...
All of the action takes place on the Lambert plantation, if you will. It was once a working plantation. Now it's just a 40-acre pecan orchard, if you will, with a grand old house or whatnot. So all the action takes place there. And there are some very colorful characters living in the old house that's owned by Louisa Lambert. That's J.D.'s sister-in-law. And Louisa has residing at the home with her Jacques Jamy, a very colorful former actor who is absolutely smitten with Louisa, and he makes it a point every evening he proposes. And every evening she says, okay, tomorrow. And, of course, tomorrow never comes. So you've got those dynamics set up, and they're kind of fun. Then you've got a very young sophomore in college, Elliot, who's also living here in this very interesting environment, who has a very peculiar take on how to learn things. So Elliot's a lot of fun. Then we meet Madison, that's J.D.'s daughter, when she returns to the plantation from college after learning about her parents being divorced and in a big huff about, well, who's going to sign my checks?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the arch political manager in the state, Sylvester Mandrake, who is brought on board to manage J.D.'s campaign for mayor. And he's quite the character and breaks all of the rules he would normally set up in managing a campaign. And, well, I'm not going to disclose what that is. But anyway, it happens. And, of course, we do have Bobby Lambert, who we hear a lot of Bobby on telephone speakers and reading letters that he has written. And he finally makes an appearance towards the end of the show. And, well, you'll just have to see what that means.
Okay. So as she's running for mayor, is she operating on a platform that is true to her heart, or is it simply a payback platform?
Well, you have hit the core of the play with its political theme. And it's a jovial theme. It's not by any means a position thing. But she's adamant to Sylvester that, no, we're not going to go attacking. We're not going to refute all the trashy stuff that's already starting to come her way from the other side. We're going to work on a platform that I believe will appeal to the citizens in this town. And she sticks to it. And, well, it seems to work.
The various characters, you've got a whole cast of people. Richard, can you go into the cast members and tell us about their background and everything?
Well, of course, I have a super cast in here, and I think George will agree that they're a wonderful cast. J.D. is being played by Susan Curtin, who is well-known in local circles, local theatrical circles, as well as audiences. And Mary Zapchinski is playing Louisa. Dick King is playing Jacques, and Dick King is a very flamboyant, excellent actor, comic actor, and he's a little flamboyant, just like Jacques is a little flamboyant.
Absolutely.
You know, Elliot, being the young man, wants to show off everything he can do and everything he's got. Madison seems to have her feet on the ground, but kind of, you know, is an interesting character along with everybody else. Brittany Williams is playing Madison, and Logan Jarecki. There are two young lovers that wind up being young lovers, possibly. And, of course, you mentioned Sylvester Mandrake, who is like the savior, the politician's savior. He comes in and takes over for every politician. And Patrick Curtin is playing him. And Sean Dion will be making brief appearances as Bobby, the ex-husband, and the man who she's running against. And my wife, Ginger, will be doing the narration, because she'll be basically telling about entrances and exits and that situation. She's basically the narrator. Since we are doing it as a reading, she'll be describing certain things, but not the emotional content of what goes on.
But a little bit of the action, you know.
Yes.
So-and-so enters, you know, through the back door in a huff, you know.
Yeah,
and
falls through the
little
ceiling, comes up through the whatever.
Right. Well, that brings me, a reader's theater versus a full-blown theater versus the day of old-time radio, where we had Foley artists and a whole lot of other people to fill in the gaps on some of that narration that a narrator would do in a reader. Tell us about how you go about directing these different kinds of productions and what's involved in understanding how to communicate to the audience what the action and the scene and the visuals really are.
Well, I call it reader's theater, a theater of the mind, much like old-time radio was.
Right.
We don't have the sound effects that old-time radio did, which was great fun at that point. But what I love about it is that the actor only has their voice and their eyes, and that's what they're working with. And they can do it. They can give you the emotional content of whatever they're talking about. Just with that, they're not moving around. Nothing is happening there. They're sitting in a chair behind a music stand. And you may think, well, that's boring. We're not doing anything. They're not moving around. No, they're not. But what's interesting is you get to concentrate more on the actual dialogue, the actual script that George has written. And one of the reasons to do it as reader's theater is so that the playwright, George, can hear the play. Instead of not in the six or eight characters, not in his mind, that's how he wrote it. And sometimes a playwright will sit there and he has figured out exactly how these characters should react. And then all of a sudden he hears a voice coming out of somebody that was not coming out of his head. And it may change his poor approach. It may change his thinking. It may change some of the dialogue. George, what happens when you first hear the script being read?
Well, a play script is a blueprint. And what this blueprint is intending to do is to give a guidance to the performers into their characters and a development of a plot line telling a story. And everything that is in the blueprint to be effective has to have so many different people involved. You've got to have a director, you're going to have a cast, you're going to have all the elements in the theater that are based on this blueprint. So the playwright, as early as possible, needs to get checks on, is this blueprint effective? And the first big one is, as we will have this weekend, the Reader's Theater. So I get to actually hear a very talented cast reading these characters that I've had running around my head for some time. They're a lively bunch, mind you, but they're very unruly. So it'll be interesting to see if my concept of JD is the same one that Susan interprets mm-hmm. from the script, and the same for all of the other characters. So I'm very excited about that element. And equally important, and it's another great benefit of Reader's Theater, is the audience participation. They are hearing and seeing for the first time a work that's never been presented anywhere at any time. And I'm inviting, and I know several folks who will be there who will have no doubt and no problem letting me know if the blueprint was effective on its maiden presentation.
So it's a little bit nerve-wracking in that sense from a playwright standpoint, or, you know, from any artist standpoint. When you unveil the painting or the statue, you don't know what the reaction's going to be. You know what your heart feels about it, but you have no idea how it's going to relate to the rest of the world.
Exactly, and that's the feedback is an important part of massaging and completing that blueprint that hopefully eventually would be a guide to a very fine performance in production.
And as far as we're concerned, having George there is very interesting for director and actor mm-hmm. because, number one, I let the actor go. You know, we give certain notes during – we have two rehearsals, and we give certain notes during those rehearsals, but they're going to come in – with an attitude toward their character. And they may have the same attitude overall that George has, but then all of a sudden there will be, you know, a little nuance that they throw in that maybe he didn't see and maybe he, you know, didn't want to see. But the audience is so important that they are giving George an idea about what works and what doesn't for them. And that's something I imagine that George, but George is an actor himself, so he knows what we're going through when mm-hmm. we do the read. But I imagine it's a little, like you said, it's a little nerve-wracking for him to sit out there after he put blood, sweat, and tears into this script, and then to have somebody say, well, these 7 pages don't really come off it right to me. You know, and then I think I'd go home and cry. But not with this script. It's a great script, and it's a wonderful cast.
It's sort of like, you know, imagining a relationship with another person and how it's going to all unfold. Because the chemistry between people is not something mm-hmm. that you can create in the mind. That's something that the actors have to actually develop on the stage.
And what the audience will use as well, their mind, as to what is going on mm-hmm. up there.
Right.
And they have the opportunity because there's not anything getting in their way.
Right.
Scenery, dancing. Ginger will shoot me for saying that. Dancing. You know, all this. There used to be a term that it still uses. If the book to a musical is not very good, okay, then it's going to work because we Fosse it, which means Bob Fosse throws in a fancy dance number,
right,
a couple of them, and all of a sudden it's a great musical.
Right.
Whereas if you take away the fancy dance music and the fancy dancing and you look at the script, it's really kind of a bore. So that's not the way you're doing it. When you're reading this, when you get the chance to see these 8 characters react to each other without lights, sound, dance,
or
music,
even costuming, you know, yeah. I mean, necessarily.
Costuming, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an important element is the Reader's Theater, and the reason I like it, I've been involved in many Reader's Theater productions through the years, is we discussed a little bit about the old-time radio drama that was all in the mind of the listener. You mm-hmm. had, I mean, the actors were reading from the scripts, and you had all the sound effects in the background, and the listener just created what it looked like and felt like.
Right.
Well, we're adding to that element the something that can only occur with theater, and that is it's live.
Mm-hmm.
The audience is in the presence of the actors as they are performing this role, and that's an element of energy that is absent in radio. It's absent in cinema. It's that's what makes theater theater. It's live and it's right now, and adding that element to the other factors, it's a good experience for an audience.
There's a real energy exchange going on between audience and actors or performers of any kind
The audience will latch on to their favorite character. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can almost feel that.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. They'll be loved, and they'll be hating.
Or appropriately hated.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And, as far as the action, the one thing I've always liked about Reader's Theater is it's almost like mime of the voice and eyes.
Exactly.
Well, are there any special features that you want to share about this play? Anything that, is going to catch the audience by surprise?
My intent here was to write a play, a comedy, because I like comedies, that I would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some characters I would like to see on stage in what kind of situations? And so that was my starting point. And so that's kind of where these characters came from and developed. Mm-hmm. And in the process of getting down on paper the actual script, which it all takes place mentally before you start putting it on paper. But it's curious because the characters, they will develop themselves. And I might not see some interplay that some of the characters are going to insist that I write, which happened a couple of times in this. So it's a lot of fun to write because these characters can be unruly.
Yeah. And they come alive in your mind's eye. There's a stage in the brain, and it's all acting out there.
And
you're trying to pull that out of the brain and put it in front of the audience.
Well, put it into the blueprint and see if the blueprint conveys that element to the actors.
And actually, the audience does that for him.
Excellent.
For George.
Yeah.
He's out there. We're explaining who exits and entrances, and they have their own emotional approach to their characters and all of that. And the audience reacts to it. And George is going to know that reaction.
Because you're going to be in the audience.
I will be there. You'll be watching it.
That'll be the physical energy of the action being conveyed.
And all of a sudden, the audience laughs, and George is going to say, I didn't think that was that funny.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta work that in. And
or the other can work. That's the funniest line in the play, Richard. Nothing.
Mm.
Okay, let's see what happens next.
Let's look at that blueprint again.
Timing is everything. How do folks go about getting tickets for this, and what are the show times again?
Well, the show times are Saturday evening, the 7th, at 7:30. And Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Tickets are $15 for adults, $10 for seniors and students. And it's at the East Bank Theater over at the Bossier Arts Council.
All right. And
get the ticket either at the door or on Eventbrite, I believe it is.
Yeah, or you can just call the Arts Council and they'll make a reservation.
They'll make a reservation for you and come see us.
There you go. Any final thoughts you want to share about this production?
I don't think so. I've just really enjoyed working with George on it, and been putting it's good. The next step takes place when we go into the first rehearsal, which is going to be interesting because
I would also like to give great credit to the company Repertory Theater and the Bossier Arts Council for coming together to allow a Reader's Theater series. Now, this is the third play in a series, so hopefully there will be other staged readings of plays written by playwrights in this area.
Mm-hmm.
That's the intent, I understand, of the company and the Bossier Arts Council. So they're kind of pioneering a new format for this area, and I certainly hope it sustains because I know there's a lot of good material out there that may be languishing in a file because there was no way to have it read or take it to that next step. Well, this may be an opportunity for that.
Well, we hope so, because I represent the company Repertory Theater and the Bossier Arts Council because I worked there for a number of years. But also, if you are out there and you have material that you want to see hear read or that you'd like to get produced, at least let's do a reading of it. You can reach me by calling the Bossier Arts Council, and they will get the number, to, and I'll get back to them, because we want to keep it going. It's an interesting, it really is interesting not only to watch, but it's very interesting to work on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know?
And I want to thank George for bringing it to us.
All right.
No, my pleasure.
George, Richard, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Appreciate it.
That was playwright George Sewell along with director Richard Fulmer, and they joined me in our Knoll Foundation studios this morning to share with us about an exciting new production coming to the East Bank Theater this weekend as the Bossier Arts Council presents a Reader's Theater presentation of a two-act comedy, I should say, called J.D., written by George Sewell. The performance, again, is this Saturday, December 7th at 7:30 p.m., and there is a matinee performance on Sunday, December 8th at 2 p.m. For ticket information and details, call the Bossier Arts Council at 318-741-8310. That's 318-741-8310. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need.